Relatively Geeky presents Professor Allen's Summer 2016 Road Trip. I'm doing the style of recording favored by Derek Coward from the Comic Book Noise Network, and that is recording with my iPod in my shirt pocket while I am driving. And at some point, I imagine I'll probably work in the Kyle Benning approach and record in a parked car. But right now, I'm on the road. I've been on the road for less than an hour, but I did want to talk a little bit, do a little preview of what, fingers crossed, hopefully, will end up as the rest of this episode, because I am going on a road trip to visit family. But I've worked in some meetings with some podcasting buddies as well. And so hopefully those will be part of this recording as well, assuming all the technology works out. But I wanted to talk a little bit about what the plans were, what my hopes and aspirations were, because you never know how things are going to turn out. Now, right now I can record positive and optimistic before these, you know, meetups and conversations devolve into legal charges, affidavits, and Facebook unfriending. I'm just saying, it could happen. The trip starts in Central Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. I'll be there at my in-laws for 2 nights, about a day and a half total. And if I'd been able to work one more day into that, it would have been an attempt to add one more guest to the list. So unfortunately, I did not reach out to Bob Fisher, which I would have liked to if I'd had more time in Richmond. But like I say, the in-laws are there, so we do visit pretty regularly. So that one didn't happen on this trip, but I certainly hope it will at some point. Now, while I am in Richmond, I am going to head about an hour west to Charlottesville and do a two friends in one meetup. And that will, of course, be with Tom Panarese and Ms. Stella. So at this point, our plans are to meet at a Barnes & Noble, head to a comic store, get lunch, and perhaps, depending on the timing, try to work a movie into the afternoon as well. The nice thing about all three of us being in the education biz, that hanging out all day on a Friday in June is actually possible. Now, before I talk about the rest of the trip, I did want to mention that I did say that this was the Derek Coward and Kyle Benning approach to recording. Well, that's going to be with one minor Professor Allen adjustment, and that is that the aforementioned gentlemen do podcast episodes without edits. And I don't think I'm good enough at this off-the-cuff talking while I'm driving to be able to pull that off. So there will be edit breaks, and I assume because of the nature of the noise of this recording, those recording breaks will be pretty noticeable and awful. So I apologize in advance, or since some of those edits have probably already happened, I apologize in retrospect. Now, also, while I'm in Richmond at the in-laws, I'm also planning to visit my old comic shop because I went to the University of Richmond. So in the mid-80s, I was going to Dave's Comics, which was within walking distance of campus. Now, I do not know if Dave's Comics is still there because the titular Dave, owner of the store, passed away a couple of months ago. So I don't know if there'll be a going out of business sale, if going out of business sale has already happened and the store's been shuttered, or if it's business as usual. I really don't know what to expect. But I'm going to just check it out to at least pay my respects in one way or another. And like I said, plan is to find Tom and Stella on Friday, and then I will be leaving Richmond Saturday morning to spend the bulk of the vacation in eastern North Carolina with my father, and sort of on the way with just a little bit of swing out to the west, maybe an extra 30 or 45 minutes of driving, is Raleigh, North Carolina, where the Sutherlands live. So the plan on Saturday is to get up pretty early. It's about a three plus hour drive to Raleigh, meet the Sutherlands, hang out with them for a couple hours in the afternoon, and then make it to my dad's in time for dinner. So like I said, that's just a brief preview and, to be honest, sort of a test recording. And I'm just really looking forward to this process, this event, meeting new people. If you remember, Emily and I, when we did our Shortbox Showcase sort of start of year episode, we talked about our new geek resolutions. And one of mine was to meet people. Lucky enough to meet Michael Bailey a couple months ago when I was on a business trip in Atlanta. So this would add a number of more people to that list of internet and podcasting buddies that I have actually shared real space with. And then there'll be more opportunities for that if all goes according to plan, as I'll be, hopefully, fingers crossed, attending, perhaps with Emily, Baltimore Comic-Con over Labor Day. Because that's one that I can stay at my sister's for. She lives about 25 minutes outside of Baltimore. Like I said, I wanted to sort of test the recording process, as well as set up the beginning of this episode, what I hope will be a longer episode with Tom and Stella and Darren and Ruth joining in as well. And I just love this idea. I'm really excited about it because I can't think of another podcaster who's actually gone on the road and recorded meetups with other podcasters or internet buddies. It's just something that I've never heard of.
The Irredeemable Shag.
No, I can't think of anyone else who's done that. So anyway, when we get back, perhaps Tom, perhaps Stella, perhaps Tom and Stella, fingers crossed, we'll see what's next. Well, I'm back. I have not quite made it to my in-laws. I'm about 10 minutes away because I decided to stop by Dave's Comics on the way in to their place. I figured that'd be easier than having settled in and say, I'm going to run out to the comic book store now. I just do it on the down low on the way in to visit. And I was pleased to see that Dave's Comics is indeed still there. Dave's business partner is running the store for now. And he did confess to not being sure what the long-term status of the store is going to be. He's still ordering new comics, but not a lot. So I'd asked about DC Bombshells, which came out a couple of days ago as I record this. And he said, nope, that's a book that he orders just for the pull boxes. He bought a couple extra of Convergence, he said, and those did sell out. But for the most part, in terms of new books, he's really just buying what specific customers are going to buy. That's just a basic premise of business. You never know exactly how many of an item you're going to sell, so your two errors are to under-order or over-order. And he's just decided at this point that the bigger mistake would be to over-order. What did he say? I think he said they already have 120,000 books in inventory or something like that, that he's trying to organize and figure out what to do with. So they've had a couple of big sales, but have not decided on the big going out of business sale just yet. And he hopes that maybe it won't come to that. One interesting point that I noted, and it relates to a broader issue or perhaps problem with the comics industry, especially on the retail side, is that, as he said, Dave, the owner of the store, was in his late 50s when he passed away. He himself is, I think he said, in his early 60s. And there's just not much new blood entering the comics retail space. They didn't say specifically, but there aren't doesn't seem to be any young heirs who are clamoring to go into the family business. And I think as much of an issue as there is with the graying of the comics readership, I think the graying of the comic retail owner, that's also a potential problem. But it's one that I personally just thought of as I was reflecting on Dave's comics. Now, one thing I liked about the stores, they always gave great customer service, and that's what I received today. Like I said, they did not have the only one new book that I was interested in, but I did happen to have my list with me. No comic collector goes anywhere without the list. Now, the store is not arranged terrifically, and their theory has always been a little more customer service in the sense of, if you know what you want, we can help you find it. But browsing the stacks is a little tricky. Part of it is, again, he's trying to bring in inventory from the warehouses into the store. It's a little confusing. But I was able to pick up the 4 Convergence number 2s that Emily and I did not pick up back when Convergence was a thing. We picked up more than half of the number 1s, and the vast majority of those we went on and picked up the number 2 as well. But like I said, there were a handful, four books that we decided at the time not to spend the money. And Dave had those books. They were full price, which goes against everything I believe in. But for me, this was as much about going back to the store, supporting the store, wishing the new owner good luck in the endeavor, as much as it was my normal comic book pursuit of getting what I want for the cheapest possible price. Don't tell anyone. This is our little secret, okay? So, like I said, I'm going to head out to my in-laws shortly, and then tomorrow is the meetup with Tom Panarese and Stella.
Remington's good name.
Oh, God.
Okay. Seriously,
yeah,
Stella, our purpose, this is about geek travel, geek vacations.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've been to San Diego Comic-Con a million times.
Five-ish.
Wow.
That's very close.
I am.
You are.
So talk about that, why you go, what you go, what experiences, valuable experiences and life lessons you learn.
The first time I went was, I think it was peer pressure.
See, peer pressure isn't always a bad thing. You know, peer pressure gets a bad name, but sometimes.
Oh my gosh, it's always about you. So anyways, peer pressure, and the group that I was with at the time was Spider-Man Crawl Space. They were going to go. So I thought, well, you know, once in a lifetime thing, why not? And I got a press pass because I was working with Spider-Man Crawl Space at the time. And it was very overwhelming the first time. So life
lesson, that's why I've never been. I fear it.
Yeah.
Baltimore might be more my speed.
It might be. I'm sure I'll bring that up when you ask me the same question.
Yeah. There's so many people there, though, that it's overwhelming. And even the first moment I walked in, I lost
almost
Josh
everyone's
and Don.
Taller than you.
It's true. Yeah. I lost Josh and Don because I was separated because of the wave of people. It's sort of like Moses parting the Red Sea, but then it closed.
So losing them is a bad thing?
It was. That was the first time I met them. All
okay,
these people,
right.
First time I met them. And then I was doing stuff for Spider-Man Crawl Space, but then Dustin over at Batman Universe, I was doing Batgirl to Oracle at the time, so he had known me.
So there was a bidding war for Stella.
Kind of. So he was asking me to do interviews and things, and then I really liked them. I thought, oh, this is great. I got to interview Katie Sackhoff.
You could dump the Spider-Man people. Go with the Batman
kind
people.
Kind of. I still did my duties for Spider-Man Crawl Space, but then I just sort of became more attracted towards the Batman Universe. Now,
have you been able to maintain your press pass all these years? Because I hear they're getting harder and harder to get.
Right. So I have to write articles and things for the Batman Universe, but I still. So I keep coming back, mainly because I enjoy interviewing the different people. I don't have to be on camera. I like to talk to the comic people just audio-wise. And, of course, Josh and Don, who, from that trip, we became really bonded, even though there were two other people there, but the three of us just really bonded, and so...
But the lifeboat only had three people, so you had to toss over the other people.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
The Jack and Rose situation. And, I totally get that, and I totally agree. Okay. I like it, but it is overwhelming. Sometimes I get stressed out, you know, coming up with questions and things, like I need to be here and here and here, but overall I love the experience.
Do you ever get, like, overwhelmed by a crowd, like, still get overwhelmed by it with a crowd that size? Like, do you find, because I'm one of those people who has to set aside, like, just a few moments to adjust to that many people.
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to being around. I mean, granted, I work in high school, but I'm not used to being around, like, massive crowds like that.
20, 25 students at a time. Even though the building might have 100 people there. I would think for me it's more, and fortunately, after 29 years of marriage, my wife's starting to figure this out. She's a total extrovert, and I'm an introvert, in the sense of where I get energy, in that definition. And being around large groups of people just wear me out so much. I'd be dead by half. I need to find the quiet place.
My wife and I are the same in that she's can be a little more outgoing than I am, but you can tell, like, we both know when we turn things on.
Recharge.
And then we're both the type of, if we're at a party or something like that, and then we're on the drive home mentally just deconstructing the entire night. Did I do something stupid? In that case, probably. But, you know, so we're both introvert in that regard, but she can be a little more extroverted than
me. Right, yeah. But for my wife, she just gets energy from people, and that's the extrovert. Like, it's like, so she loves hanging out with people in the good way.
She's reaching your energy.
She's like the parasite, and I'm Superman.
There you go.
So, San Diego Comic Con.
Yes.
I think that was it.
No, there's
that
more
was my
to
story.
It. So, okay.
If you are staking your entire reputation on this 25-cent thing, you need to be open to being criticized for it.
I don't think I like that attitude. Missy? So, what are you doing this summer for San Diego Comic Con? What are you looking forward to? What are you doing? Who are you seeing? What's going on?
Yeah. I hope something unexpected happens last year.
Like that time the guy got the pencil in the eye or the knife or whatever. What was that a couple years ago?
Oh, heavens.
You want that?
No, not that.
Okay.
But an unexpected interview. How about that? So, we were in the press junket for Gotham. We decided to stay. And then Supergirl people came through, and so we weren't authorized for this particular thing, but Josh and I stayed, and it was actually really nice to talk to those people, and most of the noise is a lovely human being. So something like that.
She's very cute, too.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to interviewing the upcoming writers of Batgirl, and then Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, because I want to know where the direction's going, so I think that's what I'm...
Quick Rebirth thoughts. Where your people are going. Where your characters are going.
I don't know how they're merging where Batgirl was and then where she was
post-Flashpoint.
Does that make sense? So she's going to Japan, but now she's going to be pre-Flashpoint Babs in Japan in a wheelchair? I don't know.
There are three Jokers. So yes, all three of them could have beaten her up.
Okay.
Yeah, or any of them, or all, or none.
None is the correct answer.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't know what. Because we talked about, I think, back on Birds of Prey, anyways, and there was already a question of what's happening. Why is she leaving Burnside? This is like the third time that she's gone to find herself. And then the Birds of Prey thing, is that happening at the same time? Is she in Japan with the Birds of Prey? Is this just a Wolverine esque book where. I don't know. I mean, it excites me, I guess, to go back to pre-Flashpoint, but on the other hand, I'm thinking, we've been with this New 52 for so long, why not just keep with it, you know?
She's one of the few characters, and granted, I didn't read a lot of the New 52 books, but she's one of the few characters that they eventually did something right with. I thought the whole Burnside thing was really good for the character, so that's where I was kind of bummed. Like, my characters, if I have characters, are the Titans, and I stopped reading the Titans because of the New 52. Nightwing was the other one, and I was reading that for a while, but that title got so boring that I was like, why am I spending my money on this? And I dropped Nightwing.
How about Grayson?
I thought it was good. It wasn't $2.99, $3.99 a month good, but it was all right. You know, I could set aside the whole, like, why the heck is Dick Grayson being a spy? And just looking at it as an adventure spy comic, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
I blame her for a lot of things, too.
All right, so I had started buying it with issue one.
Mm-hmm.
Ditched it probably around issue zero, maybe a little bit after
that. Does that make sense to you?
Only in comics does that make sense. A few years later, when they had zero.
It was about a year. It was about a year, right? So I think my last issue was maybe 13 or 14, and I was just like, I'm done. I wasn't enjoying it. And then I kept listening to your show, and when the new team rolled around, I picked it up again because it looked really good on your recommendation, and it panned out. So. The other DC book I buy is Scooby-Doo Team Up. It's Brett. Brett buys it.
And how would Scooby-Doo Team Up be affected by...
It won't.
What?
It has nothing to do with
it. It did not get rebirth?
No.
Where it's actually Scrappy-Doo Team Up.
God, don't even.
Okay, now that would be funny.
Well, you know what the funny thing was? That there was an episode where they teamed up with Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, and that book became like a $30 book because it's they don't have a big print run, and like, so my son's holding this comic, and he's like, the guy at the comic store, he has like a $30 book, and I'm like, and I looked right at him like, yeah, and I'm going to take it home and give it to my kid, and my kid's going to read it.
Why would he do that?
He has a long box, and he'll put it in a long box, not in a bag and a board.
So Stella, any more geek travel stories for us?
Are you scanning her? Is that a tricorder?
That's strange. No, I mean, besides, like...
San Diego's the main...
Yeah, it's the main one. And, I mean, sometimes I will take time out of my year and go and visit Josh or Don.
Right.
No, this year Josh came up because our birthdays are around the same time, one day after. And we watched Jessica Jones together. I guess that was...
That counts.
Yeah.
So then to finish up this part, this segment... Of all the sort of podcasting and podcasting people you've met in real life, how would you rank them? No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Shag's at the top.
Oh, is that the what?
Shag's at the top.
It's because he's paying her to say that.
My world that, you know.
He is paying her to say these things.
It's like, I've only gone two states, but it's like a whole different world out here. People say crazy things for no reason. Which brings us to Mr. Tom Hannery.
Yes. I guess on some level, even though it's a family vacation, Disney World is a little bit of a geek thing, because this is our third year going, and we may do something different next year, but... That would actually be fun. Scott Gardner and I have a similar interest with... He loves the New York World's Fair.
Right.
My interest in it is less to do with Walt Disney and more to do with Robert Moses, because I'm from Long Island, and Robert Moses is just one of those historical figures that I find fascinating. I have Robert Caro's book, The Power Broker. It's sitting on my shelf, and it's mocking me.
Possible you've used that as a literature recommendation.
I've mentioned it, but the whole idea of Epcot has always fascinated me, even since I was a little kid. When I was a little kid, I liked the space shuttle, the space program. And so the whole future world of Epcot and the World Showcase. And then there's the whole Star Wars part of it in Hollywood Studios, which they've added like some more stuff, and they're adding more stuff, so that's fun.
Are you more likely to have a meal with a Disney princess or a Marvel character?
Actually, we are doing one character meal. It is in the Pavilion of Land, and it's with Mickey, Goofy, Chip, and Dale, or something like that. It's a breakfast meal, so that'll be fun. But no, we're not the Disney princess types.
See, my wife is not like that. He kind of looks like the Disney princess type.
No.
Which one? You think Belle?
Not Beauty. Rapunzel.
Oh,
with the hair. With the hair.
You're right.
My son's biggest... He wants to see, he met like Mike or Sully from Monsters Inc.
Right,
and stuff like that. So, so there's that. But I guess the convention trip I do is Baltimore.
Our plan is for me and, fingers crossed, Emily.
Cool.
To go to Baltimore this year.
I have a press pass. This is my fourth year in a row. And Baltimore is easy because it's a day trip for me.
Right.
Because I do one day. My in-laws live in Stafford. So I leave early.
Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday morning. I went to college in Baltimore, so I know my way in and out and around the city pretty fairly well. And like last year, I got together with a friend for lunch from college because he was there. So it's familiar territory. I've wanted to go to Eternal Con on Long Island because it's another place where I'm very familiar with and don't have to pay for a hotel room because my parents and my sister live there.
Not having to pay for stuff. He's talking my language.
Yeah, yeah. So the only thing I have to pay for Eternal Con would be gas, tolls, and a ticket. Friends of mine go to New York Comic Con, and I've always thought it would be pretty cool, but I've heard it gets so crowded that it's not worth doing it. But Baltimore is fun because it's really, it's busy, and it's a huge crowd, but it always feels more low-key than sort of an entertainment.
Now, this year it's on Dragon Con. It's the same weekend. It'll be interesting to see what the effect is.
They said it was interesting how they're, and I don't know how they determine the schedule there. My feeling is that Baltimore has to deal with it more than Atlanta, in that the convention center is downtown. Right. It's next to the Inner Harbor. And right on the other side is Camden Yards.
Right.
So they have to work around the Orioles and the Ravens, whereas...
Where the hotels are compared to.
So the first year I paid by myself, and I went. Then the following year, I got a press pass because of the Choo Choo Freaks. I may have just joined the network. So I messaged Honeywell, and he was like, sure, use our name. And then they gave me the press pass. And so every year I've been able to, and I don't think they've gotten big enough to stop allowing podcasts. Right. But I do at least one episode. I do an essay.
You do that every year.
And I did one for the Batman. I did one essay during my time at the Batman universe where I was in the panel when Dan DiDio went off on that thing about how he didn't want any character
happy,
in the new 52
to be happy.
He didn't want any to be married. So I wrote about that.
As if being married makes people happy. Am I right, Tom? Come on.
Oh, my God.
Cut that part out. Cut that part out.
Every year they have the guest list. Every year I print it out. I go through this because it's fun to plan for these things.
Right.
Yeah. So I go through this sort of like, I circle everybody I've got stuff by, and then I start eliminating
it.
Narrowing
it down. And
I try.
Figure out whose line's going to be too long.
Yeah. Whose line's going to be too long. Do I want to pay to get Neil Adams' signature? Because it's a lot of money. I wasn't going to go last year. I was going to take the year off because I just had this other stuff I was doing. I'm on their email, the email list, so I got the promo email, and Marv Wolfman was going to be there. So I was
Mr. Titans man.
Yeah, and I had seen George Perez the previous year. I was like, well, I got to get Wolfman's signature on my Crisis.
Figure out your bingo card.
So I'll buy a ticket, but let me see if I can get a press pass first. And I'm not kidding. We're standing in line for the Tower of Terror, and the ride was like half broken, so the line was really long. And from the time I filled out on my phone the press pass application, and when I got off the ride, and I just checked my email while my wife was in the restroom, I had an email from Randy at the Baltimore Comic Con saying,
they're desperate. We'll press.
So it was like, good. So I went. And
see, I've heard of people being denied the podcasters who have been before at MegaCon or DragonCon or other ones. I'm sitting here with two veteran press pass recipients.
I don't know what the ticket costs for a day in San Diego. Because in Baltimore, I think it's up to about 35, 37 or something, which is manageable. I'll pay $37 to, because you end up paying that much to go to, like, a baseball game at this point.
So I was thinking about going Saturday, and also maybe Sunday, if there might be some discount on the sales.
If I didn't have to get back down here to go to work.
It's Labor Day weekend, though. Ooh. That's the only thing I was thinking.
I have to see what we can do for our travel plans. Because I've heard Sunday is one of the better days to go if you're shopping.
Yeah. And I've heard that Baltimore, it has much more of the comic focus than, say, the Wizard World shows,
There are a lot of, some years I walk home with this bag full of trade paperbacks that I got for like $5 or $6 a piece. And sometimes I walk
home. My language.
Yeah. Sometimes I would get home with a...
He didn't find Lobo 62, though.
No, I do. I will keep looking at them. Sometimes I walk home with a bag full of comics, and I rarely, if ever, pay more than $2 for a book. And if I'm paying $2 for a comic, it's a comic that's on my list that's stored in my phone.
Yes.
For a couple of years, we were reaping the benefits of Borders having gone out of business.
Oh, right.
Because all these flooded the market. Flood of trades, so I got some really cheap trades. But the people I need to get signatures from gets less and less every year, which is good, because then I'm not chasing signatures all day. And one year, Stan Lee was there. I did not pay the money. I save very judiciously over the course of the year. I literally take like $20 or $30 out every month when I get paid.
This is my Baltimore money. Seriously,
right? It adds up. My son wants to go, and he said, you know, and he even said, Daddy, Disney World's been good practice. Because he's going to be nine. And he and I can walk around Disney World by ourselves. And we did this last year because my wife wasn't feeling well, so she went back to the hotel for a little bit.
Tom's finally old enough to walk around Disney World.
Yeah, and
himself.
So Brett was
without the leash,
walked
without
around,
the leash
yeah.
to his
so
wife.
He walked around, and like, you know, here's this kid who is like really good at being crafting movements and stuff. I'm like, all right, I could probably take it. They have a lot of stuff for kids there. Good. They have a whole area with programming and all this sort of stuff that, like, you know, teaching kids how to draw. And, like, I might bring him. I'm looking forward to that to see if he feels like doing it. I might be able to get him in since he's under 10 for free with my press pass. I have to double check on. You know, my wife and I are going to Vegas in December for it.
That does not count.
We're trying to find places off the strip to go, and she said, I did see that there was this big comic store there. I'm like, well, we might go to a comic store.
I always went to Seattle, Emily and myself and Mrs. Mm-hmm. Professor.
Oh.
We went to Seattle, and of course, first thing you do, look up Half Price Book, great chain. None in Maryland, none in Virginia, none around here, but they had 25-cent books.
Wow.
Bam.
Nice.
So it made the airfare worthwhile. Wait a minute. Not all.
No,
anyway.
Did you, I don't know, did you have to pay extra to ship them back?
I didn't get that many. I was able to stuff them in my backpack.
Okay.
Well, I go to Richmond every year in February for a poetry recital competition called Poetry Out Loud with one of my students. And my coworker Amanda and I were there with his student, and there was, next to the theater was a comic store, and both of us were like, we're going to the comic store. That's why I have an Anti-Monitor action figure,
right.
Because it was on sale for like $8 or $9, and I was like, mine, I've been stalking that on eBay, and I didn't want to pay $25
for it. So that worked out. My business trip to Atlanta, was able to work in Michael Bailey, and more importantly, the Book Nook in Atlanta. I mean, as importantly. I mean, not as important as Mike, but tons of 50-cent comics.
No, in my job, prior to my teaching career, I was a proposal writer at a law firm in D.C. They used to make me go up to New York every once in a while, and I would stay in Midtown. That's why I've been to Midtown Comics.
So. I met Mara Wolfman one time. I did, and it was for Tom.
She got something signed.
Yeah, Tom asked me to get something signed, and then I brought up Dark Raven, and then the conversation became very awkward.
Mark doesn't seem to like to talk about things that he did that sucked.
Yes, not to mention Dark Raven.
You have my copy of Who's Dr. Troy? Because it had already been signed by Mr. Perez. So. And then I met him. And you'll find that when you go there, some people will charge, but it's like $2, $5 for a signature. And a lot of times, it's almost like a tip jar out for the hero initiative or something. So I didn't mind paying a couple of dollars to Mark Wolfman because that's where it was going. Michael Gold and Mike Zeck are up front.
Right.
Like the charges are right there. And
right.
I've never met anybody who wasn't incredibly nice to the show.
I think if you're not terribly nice, you probably don't get to many conventions.
Yeah.
Or you don't want to go, or you don't get asked back the second or third time.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's probably a self-selection process.
And they have a lot of people who are of our sort of generation of writers and artists who... Danny O'Neill's giving you. I just happened to have the best timing. There was no line, so I had him sign my Death in the Family trade. And I said, this is one of the first Batman stories I ever read. And he went, oh, dear. So,
you know, that Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and early Batman, that's 45 years ago now.
Yeah, Mike Golden and his wife, Renee Wintersager, is a very nice woman. Larry Hama and Jimmy Palmiotti will talk your ear off.
Right, that's what I've heard, too. So.
And he will sign things for her that... I don't think anybody knows about that.
No,
I don't think it's ever been mentioned. So I brought a couple of issues.
So I just say, this is for Stella.
Well, no, I brought a couple of issues of the Nom for Jimmy Palmiotti to sign, and then he talked on I ended up using it on an episode of In Country. He talked about like how he got the book because he was inking or whatever. So he signed a couple of issues, but there was a postcard. It was like greetings from Key West, and Corey was on
that.
It.
Right.
I had him sign it for her. Just to get it. I think he, and I had him personalize it for her. So she has a signed postcard from Jimmy Palmiotti because I got her with the Suicide Squad issue signed by John Ostrander and Jeffrey Sherwood.
Yeah. Are you Team Bath or Team Poy? This is truth time. This is, do I stay with these two gentlemen or do I leave?
I would say, I would team Raven. Is that an option? He's had enough girlfriends. We don't have to limit it to that.
She's
too.
Not a redhead.
Team play the field.
Well, that is Dick Grayson.
Well, there was evidence. In
probably
Corey. For reals? What? Can you explain? What do you think?
I like their story in Convergence. No, that was with Babs, wasn't it?
No, he had one.
They were both. Because Corey was in the New Teen Titans.
I liked them both. I did like I liked the Nightwing and Oracle Convergence book.
Okay.
I like that.
Because they got married. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
The thing about all this is what's funny is that we always have this conversation. It's just kind of a running joke. But if you actually look at the publication, I don't really put them against each other because by the time he really started going out with Barbara Gordon, his relationship with Corey had been done for years. So well, years in real time. I don't know about comic time, but it's not a Lois Lana Clark love triangle like they would do.
Why'd you leave out Lori Lamoris? Just one true love.
Yeah. I don't know. Something's fishy about that.
You want to slap him? You've known him longer than I have. And he probably won't swing back at you. Me? There's a chance.
Yeah,
there's a chance.
Yeah, but there's no love triangle there going on between the three of them, even if he does tend to sleep with one of them before he's about to marry the other twice. They were published like about a year apart from each other, but they take place around the same time. So he's just a dog. He's like.
There is evidence, though, in the last issue of Grayson. You know, did you see it? I posted it on.
No,
his.
But in Starfire, she shows up in Starfire. He shows up in Key West.
But it
says spend some quality time in Starfire.
That he ever loved is Babs.
That's not the only woman he's had a good time with, though.
When did she first appear? The 50s or the 60s, right?
Like a flashback.
Yeah, so.
Could he be with her underwater?
If we're talking about 50s or
60s era
Superman.
It was a lost love story. It was a great lost love story.
That got told and retold and retold. In fact, because I first encountered her in that Superman The Secret Years miniseries from about 84. And I was about, what, 7? When I saw it, and it never occurred to me that that was just weird. It's like, oh yeah, he's got this girl, and she's got a secret, and he figures out that she's a mermaid, and it's like, cool, all right, yeah.
Does she know that
love conquers all, love wins.
She figures it out because she has telepathy, I think. Right? Yeah. Because I think all...
And he figures it out because she has a saltwater fish tank that she sleeps in. Mm-hmm. He figured that out.
Because in her civilian guise, she just has a wheelchair, and she keeps her legs, her fin, covered with, like it's almost like a blanket or something.
Yeah.
So basically, she's the girl in the wheelchair on campus, and then totally.
So it's a proto. So it's a proto.
Bad Gordon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. I think he meets her in college.
In college, yeah.
Because her wheelchair gets out of control.
Yeah, going down a
and
hill.
She's going down a hill. And
he
either catches her or he melts the tires with her this heat
right,
vision
to down.
Slow it down, and then he catches her as Clark. So he does it very surreptitiously. And this is, I don't remember how they brought her back post-crisis,
right,
but I don't
yeah.
remember how they did that.
And she ended up having a tragic life as well. She had to marry the prince of the other land under the sea. And
she died.
Or she died.
She dies in the crisis.
Like
right.
Superman and Ronal. That was her husband. They have a bonding moment.
She was cheating on her husband?
No, no. After. She had to return to the sea.
Oh, I see. Okay. You skipped. That was like a big time thing.
Yeah, and though she's killed, I think, in Crisis 12 by a bunch of the Antivoners, Shadow Demons, in that sort of... That issue's a bloodbath. It's a great issue, but if you really, the body count is insane.
Are we still on the geek traveling segment?
Do you have any more geek travel?
No.
Geek travel. Thanks, Tom, for joining us today on geek travel.
I would love to.
That was a travel through crisis.
No, there are travel nerd things that I would love to do, just don't have the money for, that aren't related to geek stuff or comics. I hate the term bucket list. But like a wish list. Because like I have like I'm sure that you have it too, of like wish lists of creators you would like to meet.
Hanging out with Tom Paneris and Stella. That was on my bucket list. One step closer to death. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
I think you said Paneris.
Paneris.
Oh,
Paneris.
Paneris.
Like, if I'm sure if Mike Carell was there. Is there? I don't know. But
he Mark
was
Wade's
there, like,
going to be that he's probably going to be expensive though.
There. I don't think Wade charges for a lot of it, actually.
She's got her Legion trades.
The
and Wade and Kitson are both
going to
be
tough. The tough thing
probably
Wade
on her most.
the only person I can remember who charged a serious amount of money for an autograph was Neil Adams.
Okay.
Some people will be like, the first one's free, and then it's like just a few bucks for the next one.
I'm looking forward to that.
John Astro was there last year, too, so I got my copy. Him and Tim Truman were there, and I brought my trade of the Kents.
Yes, that was a great story.
You're the reason I own that.
That was a great story.
I listened to your episodes, and I went to my comic store, and it was sitting there in the $5 trade bin. So it was very, it was almost like you were guiding me.
Yes, that is exactly what we were doing. Yeah. We have mine.
And then I took it and got it.
That's great.
That's a great story. If Tom Mandrake happens to be there, I will.
But I've never seen the other.
So that's geek.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking me on your show.
And next up on our road trip, we are in the state capital.
That's right.
Of Raleigh, North Carolina, with a couple of the best podcasters in the biz. One of the best podcasters in the biz and her husband, Darren. This is Ruth and Darren from what podcasts?
From Trekker Talk.
And Warlord Worlds.
And Xenozoic Xenophiles.
And the theme of this discussion is something I know that you are well acquainted with. I have plenty of stories because I've heard many of them already. Mm-hmm. And that I think maybe that is even just scratched the surface. And that is the idea of geek travel, geek vacation, which is what I'm taking currently.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So tell us just a couple of stories or a couple of examples of some of the highlights of your geek-themed escapades.
Well, we do love to take geek trips, and we are happy to call them geek trips. And I can attribute our ability to take some of those geek trips to Ruth's very budget-minded, cost-minded focus on travel.
Mm-hmm. I knew there was something I liked about you guys. And it's Ruth's inherent cheapness.
Yes.
That's a good quality, Darren. You know that. That's a good quality.
You described that very, very well. She keeps a running list of places we would like to go.
Right.
And then she regularly keeps an eye on budget flights and hotels and all that sort of stuff, looking for opportunities. At the same time, because we are geeks and we love to tie in geek opportunities with our travel, we also keep up with places we'd like to go for filming locations and mm-hmm. for things that we've enjoyed in the past, or conventions where you might get to meet people that we haven't met before.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of keep all of those things in our mind at any given time and just look for the right opportunity at the right time at the right price.
It seems like in terms of cons that probably Dragon Con and Heroes Con are probably your two
go-to cons.
Biggies, is that right? And have you had good experiences with both of those?
I would agree that those definitely are. We were so happy. We lived for a while. Work took us out to the West Coast, to Southern California. And while we lived out there, we got spoiled because we could attend San Diego Comic-Con mm-hmm. and we could attend Anime Expo, which is the largest anime and manga con, from, you know, very relatively inexpensively. And they were great cons. We moved back then to the East Coast in 2000. And we were so thrilled to find Dragon Con. Dragon Con had been around about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years at that point in time.
But it was a fraction of what it is now.
That's right. And then also we found Otakon was a big anime and manga con up in Baltimore. And then Heroes Con in Charlotte, which was a great comic con. And we got invited to it by our friend Lawston Wallace, who works in the comic industry. He's worked on, like, the adaptations of Superman Returns, and he's done some Cavewoman and some other art. He's a fantastic artist. Go to LawstonWallace.com. And he invited us down to Heroes Con very early on after we moved back because he was a guest there. So we got to know it. So Heroes Con has definitely been our go-to comic con for a long time, and Dragon Con our go-to multimedia con.
Right.
And we love to go to cons, but we don't have a lot of money. We can't afford to fly to them, so we go to cons that are within driving distance. We have some friends who don't consider driving distance what we consider driving distance.
If I do the map of Raleigh to Atlanta. That's on the outside edge.
Yeah, it's 6.5 hours. It's a 6.5 hour drive for us. That's not too bad. I mean, we're fine at 6.5 hours.
Going back to the budget travel strategies over the years is sometimes not staying really close to the event, but out on the outskirts, and then like the, take a train in or some strategies like that we've done with Atlanta.
Yes.
As well as having peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and tuna, you know, just kind of the pack your lunch mentality.
That's right.
To really, you know, stretch the dollars.
So I could not imagine at this point going to Dragon Con. It just seems too huge, but you guys at least maybe have grown up with it to some extent. Right. So you go, it's only a little bit bigger than last year, a little bit bigger than, so you've been able to. But
we'll just have to drag you down there.
It scares me.
Dragon Con, honestly, and we've been to San Diego Comic Con. Dragon Con is our absolute favorite con.
Right.
And it's because it basically is a dozen cons in one.
Right.
You can have whatever experience you want. If you're a Star Trek fan, you can just do Star Trek. You can just do Star Wars. You can just do anime. You can just do manga. You can just do Marvel and DC Comics. There's a track for all. You can just do British TV. Right. There's a track for everything.
Oh, there's a podcast track, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a podcast track, too.
Some of everything.
And the thing is, some of the panels, like Arrow, for instance, or The Flash, that are really popular right now, you go to their panels, they'll be packed, and you'll have to wait in line for an hour to get into them. But you can instead choose to go to, you know, the Kolchak the Night Stalker anniversary panel, and there's going to be 15 people there.
But that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was a fantastic panel.
We went and there. A couple of people showed up in costume.
In costume, yeah. Who would ever see Kolchak the Night Stalker? Darren McGavin, you know, steps right out there. Looked just like him. It's 24 hours a day, and panels start early in the morning. They have panels as late as 11 o'clock at night. It's just a fantastic experience. And I know Shag Matthews would agree with this because he goes to it every year.
Mm. That's not an endorsement.
But we love Dragon Con. It's our go-to con for multimedia. Heroes Con is fabulous. It's been around about 30 years. It's become very well known in the industry. A lot of the comic industry professionals are very familiar with it. They come down for it, and it's a very family-friendly con. We love that about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very opening, open and exciting, and it never feels overwhelming, though it has 30-some thousand attendees, I think, that come to it. But it never feels overwhelming. It's really a nice con.
Well managed. Yeah. Like, when people know the logistics and how to make things flow well, it's a good experience.
Yeah,
but even just outside of cons, you two have managed to pull off some very nice geek-related travel, both domestically and a few international ones as well.
That's right.
We have, and I'm going to let Ruth talk about this.
I'll say, start off with saying New Zealand. I think that was our first big international trip.
Right.
And the reason being was we loved the Lord of the Rings films, and just the scenery in those films was definitely, you know, a travel showcase for New Zealand, and we wanted to see it for ourselves, and we were able to find a tour package where the guides knew the locations of the films and got permission because some of them were on private property that you couldn't access on your own.
Yeah, some people will go and try to go on their own, and some places you can't get to on your own.
Right.
And that was just a remarkable experience. We were very fortunate to do that.
That was a fantastic. That was really our first big international trip. We actually had wanted to visit New Zealand for years prior to that because we used to watch the old Hercules and Xena TV shows, which were filmed in New Zealand. So we started seeing New Zealand back then. And New Zealand went on our "we really want to go to it" list back in the mid-90s.
And then when Lord of the Rings said it shot to the top of the list.
That's right. Exactly right.
We must make this happen.
We loved that tour. It was fantastic. Everything about it. And it was our first big international trip. And we just thought, oh, we love this so much. We have to find a way to do this. So being budget-minded and budget-conscious, we started looking for ways to, you know, earn air miles or find discount hotels. And off-season, we travel often in the off-season, so it's not the best time of the year maybe to go to a place, but it's still fantastic to get to go. And that's what we look for in our international travel, and we've done several others since then.
So let's talk about the United Kingdom. There's so many things there that were tied into things that we've loved for years. So why don't you share about seeing the Sherlock Holmes Museum?
Yeah, I was going to say, the UK is one of those places we've always wanted to go, the UK, because it's a gorgeous country. It's very compact. And so just so many beautiful things and historical things, Stonehenge and Bath. We've been to lots of those places and absolutely love it. We would wanted to go to them anyway. But while
Stonehenge, you go to mostly because of This Is Spinal Tap.
Oh, is that
the movie? Is that right?
That's exactly why it was on our list. But of course, the first thing that I had to go to when we went to London was the Sherlock Holmes Museum, because I've been a Sherlock Holmes fan longer than I can remember, and I wrote you a very lengthy email about that when
yes.
you covered it.
Yes, you did.
So I've said my piece there, I guess, but we had to go there right away. I absolutely love it. You know, getting to go to 221B Baker Street, getting to, you know, go through that house, which, you know, we all know Sherlock Holmes was real. So uh-huh. He lived right there.
And we got a walking guide so we could walk to places in the city that
were... Oh, that's
were
great.
Reference in the
story.
In the footsteps of Sherlock Holmes was
right.
the name of it. Yeah, so we could go
that's
to all the different places
typical
the stories. And then also we're Doctor Who fans, so the new Doctor Who series is in production in Cardiff. So, I mean, the thing is the UK is compact, so it's an easy train ride. It's like 3 hours by train from London to Cardiff. So we've been there
mm-hmm.
and seen all kinds of fun things in Cardiff. And I think we did some other things in the UK too, didn't we?
Sherwood Forest, I'm a huge Robin Hood fan,
great.
So that was another must-go-to place again. Got on the train in London, rode up, and found Sherwood Forest. And we found where Nottingham Castle had been.
Mm-hmm.
So just so many wonderful things to see there.
And there was some monster hunting in Scotland?
Oh, Loch Ness, yes. That was fun, too. I stared at the water for quite some time, waiting for the monster to show. No luck that day.
Well, they do actually have it set up quite nicely for you, because you can take the boat tour across Loch Ness to look for the monster. And if you don't see it, when you get to the end and you disembark on the other side, they have a plastic giant purple monster. So you can take your photo
so
with it.
Like, basically, it's
yes.
a lifelike.
So we do have a photo of you with the monster, so you did see it.
That's right. It just wasn't in the water.
It was sunning itself, right?
That's true.
And then we're a fan of so many British television shows. While we were in London as well, I'm a huge fan of The Avengers. So we've been to John Steed's flat from The Avengers, have a photo outside of it, Emma Peel's flat, Tara King's flat, and Pretty's flat. So we have photos in front of all of those.
And those become like treasure hunts because
right.
they aren't like on group tours or, you know, any special notices to, you know, on the door
right.
saying this is this location. But it takes just go to the internet, find information on what the address is, you get a photo of the place, and then it's a treasure hunt for us to figure out how to get there using public transportation so we can go. And it just becomes a fun part of the trip.
And you notice she said public transportation.
Yes,
that's right.
And our feet. We walked a lot.
We walked a lot.
And then there was that one time you guys were knocked out and you woke up in the prisoner set and it took you... No, wait a minute.
That was magical.
How long has Port Marion been on our wish list? I believe
yeah.
it was on our wish list when we got married,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So it was. So Port Marion, the location where the Prisoner television series mm-hmm. was filmed. Ruth, when we got married in 1988, Ruth rode off to Port Marion. There wasn't an internet or anything back there. So she rode off to them to get their visitor's guide. And she still has that visitor's guide. It was quite a couple of decades later before
mm-hmm.
we actually finally made it. But yes, Port Marion is a magical place in northern Wales where The Prisoner was filmed. We've been twice. They have an annual Six of One convention that they hold in the spring each year, again in the off season.
Just for Shag, this is not the Seven of Nine convention. That is something totally different.
That's right. Six of One is not Seven of Nine. That's right. But they have a wonderful convention there, again in the off season, because Port Marion is very much a tourist destination for people other than Prisoner fans. So all during
mm-hmm.
the summer, it's very busy. But in the early spring, they have this convention. And we've been to it two different times, made some wonderful friends, it looks just like it did in 1967 and 68 when it was filmed.
It's gorgeous.
So much history to it. It was built basically by an environmentalist who was also an architect and wanted to prove that you could build into the landscape.
Right, in a sustainable, safe way. Yeah.
Exactly, instead of flattening the landscape. So it's this magical, and he loved Italy.
It's like
an Italian village in northern Wales. Mm-hmm. Absolutely gorgeous.
And I'll add, the convention does these amazing recreations. So there's the parade that gets recreated with the mini moat driving and the parade signs, the music.
That's right. And also the human chess, which I participated in as well.
Awesome.
So they recreate that scene. And Rover itself shows up during the chess game. It can be quite startling the first time we were there. And it's like, oh my gosh, there's Rover. So, and the mini-mokes are magical to ride in. They actually have them there in the village during the weekend. They still have the Prisoner Penitharthing bike painted on the front of them. And you can get rides all around. And one of the years we were there, there's the car that the prisoner drives in the opening credits, which was a very customized Lotus that there were very few of, but there was a fan who actually owns one of those, and it's painted exactly like the one. So we have a photo of us sitting in that.
It's gorgeous.
So it's fantastic. So
and the refrain, at least in our household, is every time we hear you guys have done one of these things, like sat in the car, we say, of course they have.
Yes. We are familiar with that phrase. Sometimes we can hear it coming before you say it.
We're very fortunate, and we've really made an effort to look for these opportunities and take them when we can.
And it's nice. We're lucky that we both love the same things.
Right.
So it's never that I'm going to do something
dragging
that she wants to do. She's going to do something that I'm going to do. We both are just, you know, we love the same things. I might love something more than she does, but there's nothing that either one of us likes that the other one doesn't. So it's easy for us to do things like this. Mm-hmm. And like Ruth described it as a treasure hunt, because we like treasure hunts too. So a lot of these things are sort of treasure hunts. And we're very patient. I mean, Port Merion, it was 20 plus years between when we wanted to go and when we finally made it. So we're patient too.
Mm-hmm. And that's by, I think, between the patience, the planning, I would throw in the looking for bargains on the financing.
I have to
always mention that.
Yes.
And I did talk to Darren and Ruth, you know, before we started recording, and as a finance professor, I do approve of all of their schemes that they've come up with. Everyone seemed to be legal, above board, and wise. So.
Well, thank you.
We got the Alan Middleton seal of approval.
Yes.
All right. Professor Alan stamp. Well, thank you for letting us talk about
it. That is great. Thank you. I know you've had some great adventures over the years. So.
Yeah, we hope to have more.
At this point, you've heard the whole rest of the episode, and you know that my meetings with Tom and Stella and Darren and Ruth went really, really well. So pleased that I got to meet just 3 3/4 wonderful, wonderful people. Stella's kind of short. I met 4 wonderful, wonderful people. So let me just give the brief recap of what we did on the trips. Met Tom and Stella at the cafe at Barnes & Noble. Stella had made a poster for me because, you know, she teaches middle school students and that's what they do. I treated them for lunch, and by that I mean I gave them each a quarter and said, hey, whatever you guys want for this, it's on me.
Actually, we did hang out in the cafe for quite some time. Most of that conversation was recorded by either of us or all of us or both of us. Tom did a lot of recording as well, so hopefully he won't undercut me and release his episode first. Then we went to lunch, and the lunch was at a place called Firefly that had some board games and video games in it and was playing 80s music, or as Stella called it, music from before I was born. Tom and I recognized most of it, so there's that. We did not play any of the board games or even any of the video games, but we reminisced about our game-playing experience and hung out and chit-chatted and had, all in all, a pretty good time. And then we went to Tom's comic book shop, Atlas Comics. He picked up the books from his pull list, and then the three of us also spent some quality time in their 50-cent bins. And what I like about Atlas Comics 50-cent bins is, as they called it, these were fresh 50-cent books, which means pretty recent books off of their shelves. As well as, of course, your older books were in there as well, but there were some really interesting new stuff. I spent, I believe, a total of somewhat over $4. I bought, I think it was 8 or 9 comics. It was less than $5. Stella took a picture somewhere. She was amazed that I would spend more than 25 cents for a comic. Point is that even at 50 cents, that's a pretty good deal for a book that was on the shelves a year or two ago. Most of the ones that I picked up were books that were related in some ways to other books that I've picked up. So I picked up the next Project Nemesis book by Jeremy Robinson and Matt Frank. That was a book that I covered issue 1 of on a recent episode. And I picked up a couple of books of that same concept. Books from series that I had already talked about on other podcasts, so they were sort of follow-up books. I also picked up a handful of books in the Wayward series. These are 4 books that were totally disconnected, but they're by one of my favorite young writers in comics, Jim Zub. I had the good fortune of talking to Zub on the Book Guy show back in the day when he was working on wrapping up Skull Kickers. I had a really good time talking to him, and Skull Kicker books are really excellent. So I wanted to pick up some of his other work. So they had, well, I think it was 4 pretty disconnected Wayward books, something like 2, 6, 8, and 13. Something like that, very disconnected books. But hope to either find some ones to fill in some of those blanks, or simply read those and see what I can make of them. And then we headed back, said our goodbyes, cried many tears. That was mostly because of Stella's driving. But no, seriously, she's small, but she's feisty. Then made it back to the Barnes & Noble parking lot safely, and, you know, there were a few moments I wasn't sure that was going to be the case. Then headed back to my in-laws, and then the next day, otherwise known as today, drove down to Raleigh, North Carolina to meet the Sutherlands, and as you would expect if you've listened to any of their excellent shows, Trekker Talk, Xenozoic Xenophiles, or Warlord Worlds, they are a delight. In addition to the recording that they did that you heard earlier in this episode, we also recorded some things for upcoming episodes of Warlord Worlds and Trekker Talk, because they're going to be going to Heroes Con and talking to a lot of listeners and other podcasters and buddies about the books that they cover on their 3 podcasts, and then create episodes out of those. And even though I'm not going to be at Heroes Con, this meetup gave us an opportunity to do some recording for their show as well. And we did that at the North Carolina State Library, which, if you're a fan of libraries, it's pretty impressive. We Middletons are fans of libraries. Nice architecture, very modern, some cool furniture, some we couldn't figure out how to make comfortable, but still cool looking. And then we headed out to a nearby pizza place and had some subs and a very nice lunch, continued the conversation, and again, And again, it's hard to find a couple of sweeter, nicer people in the world than the Sutherlands. So, four thumbs up all the way around on all the people that I met and was able to hang out with. And I'm not quite winding down just yet, because I think there's a good chance that there will be one trip to the comic book store in my dad's town. Past, they've had some pretty good discount bins. So I will report on that as well as we continue Professor Allen's Geek Vacation 2016. And this will probably be the last of the recordings for the episode. I just visited the local comic shop in my dad's town. And I did pick up Wonder Woman Rebirth. They did not have a couple other new books or books from last week that I was looking for. I'll have to pick those up when I get back home. And I picked up a couple dollars worth of nicely priced discount books. And Cyber Rats number 2. I'm not sure why on that one. I'm going to say I'm 500 miles from my house. It's a little warmer down here in the south. I'm going to go with some level of confusion, general disconcerted, and heat stroke. What else could explain Cyber Rats number 2. But I wanted to just talk for a second about how I even knew about this store. This is the third year that I've gone to the store. I come visit my dad during the summer. And once during each trip, I find my way over to Carolina Comics and More. To be honest, I didn't see a lot of the More. It was mostly comics from what I could tell. I discovered this store through an iOS game. A number of years ago, Emily and I both started playing Please Stay Calm, a zombie-themed iOS game. But what I like about this game, what it does, is it lists about 20 locations nearby where you can, quote-unquote, go fight zombies. And I'm pretty sure those are based on, it used to be maybe Foursquare check-ins, now it may be Facebook check-ins. But it lists local locations, and of course you can set up these locations as supply drops or safe houses, that sort of thing. But it does give it this sense of sort of the verite of being able to look for supplies or wipe out zombies in actual nearby named locations. So, a couple years ago, when I was down, I noticed and almost dropped my eye device, that one of the locations that was being pulled in when I was playing the game at my dad's house was Carolina Comics, and it noted it at, 1 mile away or something like that. So I headed straight to the internets, found out where Carolina Comics and More was located, which is actually by driving about 3 miles from my dad's house. And they had pretty good discount bins. Now, to be honest, this year they were down to like 1.5 discount bins. And half of that was a dollar, and half of that was a quarter. So, like, on average, it worked out to like 3 for $1, something like that. Or by the time I finished buying them, they had had 4 or 5 boxes in the past. So, maybe I just hit them at a bad time. But, did find a few books, some of them that I'm going to read and do on the reading journal. Some will just get thrown into the quarter bin database. And I'm sure at some point on a short box showcase, Emily and I will talk about Wonder Woman Rebirth. But I think in terms of the road trip episode, that's about everything that I have. And I gotta say, it turned out as absolutely good as it positively could have. Okay, I'll be honest, they could add some more discount bins here at Carolina Comics. But other than that, meeting Tom, meeting Stella, meeting Darren and Ruth, buying dollar comics, 50-cent comics, and quarter comics in two states, hanging out with good people, really an excellent time. So I think I'm going to wrap this up, but just wanted to thank you for joining me on my recounting of the 2016 road trip. And I want to thank Tom and Stella and Darren and Ruth for being great hosts in their respective cities and for helping me with my geek year resolution of meeting people. Meeting people is really not that hard, I've learned, if the people you're meeting are pretty awesome.